Florida's most unwanted. Who are they and what's being done to round them up? We've got the whole list of critters that commonly make their way uninvited into homes and businesses in Southwest Florida. Our list is presented by biologist and expert critter remover Patrick Gibson. That's coming up on the Royal Palmcast starting right now.
You're listening to The Royal Palmcast, the show about all things real estate. From the production studios of the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association in Fort Myers, Florida, here's your host, Jim Sandville.
Welcome to The Royal Palmcast. I am indeed your host, Jim Sandville.
Indeed.
Indeed, indeed. We're coming to you today from the studios of the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association, just like every show. Mm-hmm. We're in Fort Myers, Florida, and we talk about things on this show that realtors care about. Homeowners, home buyers, home sellers, if you live in a home, you're probably going to care about the stuff we have to say today. I'm here with Jerry Johnson. Hey, Jer.
Hey, Jim.
Do you mind if I call you Jer?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do people call you Jer?
Yeah, some.
Really?
Yep.
Huh, interesting.
In high school, from football, they used to call me Big Jer.
Big Jer, was that your nickname?
It was one of them.
Yeah? Wow.
Oh, I can't mention the other ones, but...
Very cool.
That was a nice one.
Yeah, no, I'm sure they're all good. I'm sure they're all good, Jerry.
Yeah.
We have a very cool guest today. His name is Patrick Gibson. He is the owner of the Professional Wildlife Removal Service in Cape Coral and Fort Myers area of Southwest Florida. Patrick has a super interesting job. He is serving all of Southwest Florida and removing and relocating unwanted critters from homes and businesses throughout the area. He served more than 4,000 clients, including homeowners, all major property management companies in this area, and even businesses such as Walmart, Home Depot, where I'm sure critters just wander in at will at times, and even the Southwest Florida International Airport. And he also works with a lot of real estate agencies from Naples to Port Charlotte here in Florida. And we welcome him to the Royal Palmcast. Welcome back, Patrick.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
This, if my math is correct, this is your third appearance on the Royal Palmcast.
It is.
Yeah, very cool.
Thank you.
This is the guy, Jerry, I think you'll agree, he's got so many interesting stories. We just can't contain it in one show.
Impossible.
Today, what we're going to talk about is especially cool because I have asked Patrick to consider what are Florida's most unwanted critters and pests and such. He has come up with a list. The number happens to be 9. So without any further delay, let's jump into it. What is the number 9 most unwanted in Florida?
Okay. All right. So number 9 most unwanted. I'd probably put that at bees.
Bees.
So that's usually something people don't really think a whole lot about. But we generally have two types of bees that one causes an issue. Well, they both cause issues, but they're dealt with in two separate ways. We're going to have killer bees, which can be dangerous, hence the name, and honeybees, which we like. They do a great job for us. So two different techniques for removal. Honeybees, we're going to think about live removing those. So if we had a honeybee and a killer bee side by side and they weren't alive, so you couldn't see any type of characteristics other than how they appear, but no behavioral characteristics, they would look pretty similar, almost the same. If they were alive doing their thing, we would see that the killer bee is far, far, far more aggressive than the honeybee. Honeybee is very docile.
What makes them so angry?
Just the nature of their behavior.
I blame the parents.
I was going to say, yeah. it's probably something in their childhood.
Could be a bad upbringing.
That's possible.
It's
so sad.
But they're the ones we need to be cautious of because that's where you see the major danger with bees.
Have they been in Florida forever or are they new?
For a while. These are things that... You know, we've all heard about from back in like the 70s.
Yeah.
They've migrated north, you know, from different areas.
Bees are coming.
And for the most part, they're not that big of a deal. But we can tell the difference between the two in aggression levels. So if we had a hive of killer bees versus a hive of honeybees, we could walk up to, say, early in the morning, and it's fairly docile. You'll see them kind of clustered together, moving around a little bit, doing their thing, servicing their hive. If you tried to do that with killer bees, you wouldn't have the same luck. Their area defense is going to be bigger. They're going to be more aggressive, and they're the ones that are going to chase you. Okay, so, and if you are unfortunate to get stung by one, that is going to release a pheromone that is now going to attract the attention of the other bees who are now going to come for you. So that's where it gets to a dangerous situation. Multiple bee stings. Even on a person that isn't allergic, a person that is, obviously even one sting can unfortunately be fatal. So we're always very cautious with bees.
Okay.
So if we have a honeybee situation, best technique there, call somebody that does live removal, which is not us. I don't do that. It's generally people that work directly with bee farms, or it's the bee farm itself, where those bees can actually go to that farm and be extraordinarily useful. So that's the best technique there. The worst technique is pull out a can of spray and start spraying honeybees. We don't want to do that if we can avoid it. Sometimes it's impossible to avoid situations like that, but you always want to avoid it if possible.
Yeah.
Killer bees have to be euthanized no matter what. They're of a species, unfortunately, that can take over a honeybee hive. So you can have a honeybee hive that has now been taken over by a queen killer bee, and that hive becomes radicalized.
So
we don't want these things to survive because it has a negative effect on things. So those are two to be cautious with.
Okay,
so,
bees, number nine. How about number eight?
Number eight, woodpeckers. Got a couple species of woodpeckers. The main two that people are going to see are going to be the red-headed woodpecker, and I'm going to say this next word in two ways because it's actually acceptable both ways. The way I like to say the next one is pileated woodpecker, but people also say pileated. Either way is fine. You're not wrong either way. But anyway, the second one there, those are the larger ones. Those are the very large guys that you see. Best description of the pileated is going to be they're about the size of a crow, which is a pretty good-sized bird. And what makes woodpeckers so bad on certain homes is that they can peck what's called decorative foam. Which are parts of the home, usually in high points. If it's a single or a two-story, it's up at the highest parts of the house. It's under the eaves, and it gives a nice decorative look. Builders used to like to use this quite a bit. It's not in favor anymore, but it used to be, and it's on a lot of houses. But they could do a lot of shapes with it that you couldn't really do with concrete or stucco. So they'd put this in place. When the male woodpecker finds that, pecks the hole, attracts a female, and now there's a nest inside there in, again, protected species. You need to wait till they become hatchlings, little ones become fledglings, everybody leaves, then you can repair it. You want to get these guys earlier than later. They're protected, so you can't go pellet gunning them or slingshotting the guys. You don't want to do any of that. There's very good techniques for what we like to use. Well, there's two main techniques out there. The one that we prefer in every case is going to be a clear repelling gel, which is not a harmful chemical, doesn't hurt the bird in any way, but it's more consistency when the bird lands, and it lands on it, and it's almost like a petroleum jelly-like substance where it's a goo almost. That gets on them, and they tend to panic because they don't want that on their wings, and they fly away, and that's a great way to repel them. And that's my preferred technique. The second technique is taking your trim or your corbels and actually putting a eggshell of concrete around it, which you lose your shape. It's a very expensive process, and I end up repairing quite a few of these each year because they can still peck through it. Most people don't realize the strength and power of a woodpecker, either case, the redheaded or the pileated. Their beaks and their ability to peck is amazing. We've had them land on top of stop signs and peck dents into a thick metal stop sign. So if they can do that, they're getting through the little eggshell that people try to cover, some of these things with. So I'm not a fan of that. It's expensive. It's not an effective technique, in my opinion. There's better ways to go.
Yeah. All right. What is your number seven most unwanted in Florida?
Okay. Number seven is Muscovy ducks. Muscovy ducks, for people that don't know what they look like, it's not a smooth-looking, attractive mallard, for example. This is going to be a duck where it's going to have a wattle to it. It's going to have a bright red wattle around the neck, around the beak. Lots of bumps. They're a bigger bird than most, so they're very easy to pick out. We've got the male and the female. We have the drake and the hen. The biggest problem, for one being a complete nuisance animal, the bigger problem we have is the destruction of the mallard population. Okay, so we'll have the drake, we'll have the male Muscovy get into the female mallard population, and it can reproduce with that female mallard. Mm-hmm. It won't have another mallard. It'll have an infertile hybrid called a mullard, okay, which now takes the ability of that female mallard to have an actual mallard. So it's making something that can't further its progeny down the line, and it's wiping out its capability to reproduce. So they're literally getting into that population and destroying the protected mallard species.
Jerry, you wore a mullard in the 90s, didn't you?
80s, Jim.
80s, okay.
Yep.
Right.
And then with those guys, they also like to get into attics. This isn't something that just happens out in the wild. They can push their way into soffit if it's in the right location. If you have what's called a roof return, meaning that they can stand on a lower roof. And you see this on the fronts of homes. A lot of times the entrance to the home is raised up a little bit higher than most. And you have soffit that wraps back. And a lower roof sits under the soffit and it meets at a point called a return. They'll get underneath that, and they're very, very strong birds, and they will push up on that last piece of soffit, which is the weakest in most cases, and they push their way into your attic. Then they can have quite a few eggs.
Wow. Been there, had that.
I can't imagine. Jerry, you've experienced this?
Yes, I have. Yep.
Really?
Yeah, recently, about a couple months ago.
Wow.
And had to open the attic access, and hope the thing came out the attic space, and he finally did, but I have blown insulation, and he ended up having eaten the insulation and just didn't last too long after he came out, but I was fortunate he came out.
Always
good that when they can come out on their own, because again, this is, you know, it's a species that they're not supposed to be here. They're technically supposed to be euthanized. I'm just not the biggest fan of that. I leave that to other people. I do like to evict them out of the house, fix it so that they can't go back in by strengthening up the roof returns, and then when we can, we like to add some stainless steel spikes in so they can't do it in the future.
All right.
So that's the Muscovy ducks.
All right. What is your number six? Florida's least or most unwanted. Florida's most unwanted.
Okay. This interesting spot for six, but we're going to put snakes here.
Snakes.
Because there's quite a bit to say about snakes. Most people don't have the best reaction to snakes, for the most part. Some people do, but most do not. So snakes, what I want people to be aware of is that we've got 46 species in our area. Only 4 of the 46 are venomous. Okay, and again, I'm emphasizing the word venomous, not poisonous.
Mm-hmm.
So of the 4 species, we are going to have a coral snake, okay, a very brightly colored snake, and these snakes can be looked up online. So my recommendation to anybody is, of the 46 species of snakes, you don't need to memorize all the snakes. Memorize the 4 venomous ones. Everything else after that doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Know your venomous snakes. You only have 4. Easy. So we're going to have a coral snake, very brightly colored.
Orange and black, right?
Orange, black, and?
Yellow.
Ah.
Okay, so our 3 colors on that. What makes these guys unfortunately so dangerous is they no longer make anti-venom for it, and they haven't for quite some time. Their venom is extraordinarily dangerous. It's a neurotoxin. Okay, so on snakes that have venom, we have neurotoxins and we have hemotoxins. Neurotoxin, if you look at the how the word is structured, you can see it neuro. It works on the nervous system. So it's going to directly attack the nervous system, which is going to shut down the muscles, okay? Meaning that your heart is a muscle, your lungs need muscles. That stops. You die if you don't have anti-venom, of which they don't make.
That's a bad outcome.
So you don't want that. The beauty of that snake is, fortunately, it's brightly colored. You can see them from a distance. So pay attention to what you're doing. Nothing to be concerned about. The population is small, but it is a dangerous snake.
You don't have to worry about walking in the lawn at night barefoot, do you?
Usually not.
Okay,
no, usually not with those guys.
I've never done that, but
I worry about the ducks when I do that.
The fangs are also not like you'd see on like a rattlesnake, where you got these big protruding fangs coming off. Their fangs actually curl back, and you'll see that with snakes that are neurotoxic. So that's the coral snake. The other venomous snake to pay attention to is going to be called a cottonmouth. Most people will think of that as a water moccasin, which That name's also acceptable, but the real name of it is Cottonmouth. And it got its name from inside its mouth is literally bright white. You don't want to be that close to the snake to see that it's bright white, but it is. Their venom is not neurotoxic. That is hemotoxic, which, again, if we look at the word, that's going to directly affect red blood cells, okay, and tissue. Dangerous, and it can kill you, but we've got antivenoms for that. That can be dealt with. So there's those guys. Again, always recommend to look up and see what they look like. The big mistake with those versus water snakes, for example. Water snakes are very, very prevalent. They have a spade-shaped head. People see that diamondy-shaped head and think, oh my gosh, okay, water moccasin, cottonmouth, dangerous. Not necessarily. Mm. That's not a rule to go off of. So just know what a cottonmouth looks like. They're very distinctive. But the populations are low, very, very high populations of brown water snakes and Florida water snakes, which you'll see around the water all the time, and they look dangerous, but they're not. Hmm. So just learn what the dangerous one is.
Okay, good tip.
So then we have two types of rattlesnakes. We've got the eastern diamondback. It's a big, thick, broad snake. It's got literal diamond patterns on the back that are undistinguishable from anything else.
Really?
Obvious. Pygmy rattler, not as obvious, but it has an actual rattle on the back, just like an eastern diamondback would. Mm. The eastern diamondback, when it rattles, it's going to sound like a maraca. When you've got a pygmy, it's going to sound like bees buzzing, type noise. Mm. All snakes are going to shake their tail, so don't feel like if you see a tail shake, it's a rattlesnake. It's not.
Good to know.
It's got to have an actual rattle to be one of those two snakes, and it's a very distinctive feature. So
wow.
For snakes, learn the four venomous ones. Everything else, don't even worry about it.
Very cool. All right. We have five more of the Florida's most unwanted, but we're going to get to that right after a very quick break. We'll be right back after this.
Hi, I'm Caroline Boland, and you're listening to the Royal Palmcast.
Hi, this is Jerry Johnson, and you're listening to the Royal Palmcast.
Hi, I'm Samantha Marker with Myla Faubuchon Realty, and you're listening to the Royal Palmcast.
Education, you need it, we've got it. I'm Angela Foster, Director of Education at Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association. If you're a realtor in Southwest Florida, the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association has the classes, courses, workshops, and webinars you need to stay at the top of your game and keep your license current. Looking to bill your continuing education hours? We offer core law and code of ethics classes to fulfill your CE requirement, along with many other courses to fulfill your requirements for specialty credits. Want to learn the ins and outs of the specific market you serve? Our A-Series provides an in-depth look at Cape Coral and Fort Myers with all the right experts to fill you in. Our Contract Series is a 5-session course on listing agreements, FAR bar contracts, timelines, and more. It doesn't end there. Classes like how to stay out of real estate jail, negotiating skills, listing tips, conflict resolution, and many more keep realtors in Lee County up to speed with the latest information. Many of our classes are free to members and some are open to non-members. If you're a real estate professional who's interested in working in the Southwest Florida market, we've got you covered. For more information, visit our website at rpcra.org or email education@rpcra.org.
We hope you're enjoying the Royal Palmcast, a production of the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association, your association for realtor resources, services, and education in Southwest Florida. We're committed to the success of all our members and advocate for property rights, both commercial and residential. We continue our efforts educating and influencing policymakers at all levels about issues important to realtors and homeowners. RPCRA also leads the way with community involvement, market analysis, and member engagement, all of which contribute to a superior realtor experience. With two convenient locations in Fort Myers and Cape Coral, the staff of RPCRA is here for you. You'll find us online at rpcra.org and across social media, including Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, SoundCloud, and all major podcast apps. Be sure to subscribe, like, share, and follow us to stay current on all our upcoming classes and events. Now, back to Jim Sandville and the Royal Palmcast.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Royal Palmcast. I'm Jim Sandville, along with Jerry Johnson.
Hello.
Hey, hey. And we've also got Patrick Gibson in the studio. He is giving us his list of Florida's most unwanted critters and pests. And Patrick was right in the middle of talking with us about snakes. Not in the middle. He kind of wrapped it up. But we want to make sure we cover one other snake that is very prominent in Florida before we get on to the last five. What's that snake?
We just want to briefly touch on the Burmese python, which has been in the news around the country, around the world. Definitely an issue. Definitely a problem. Not a whole lot of concern with it in our area at this point.
Mostly in the Everglades, right?
Mostly in the Everglades. They will eventually run out of food sources in the Everglades, which they will start moving up north a little bit, you know, on both coasts. But at the same time, when you reduce the food source a lot, it also reduces the population a lot. So that part of it will help.
Yeah, thanks, Patrick. That's really good information about the Burmese python. Now, how about other snakes that are not a problem?
Okay, so the snakes that we really like here, because they do a great job on the rodent population, they're going to be constrictor snakes. Anything that's non-venomous is going to be a constrictor. Okay, so we're looking at the black racer, which is our number one snake population-wise. Everybody's going to see those at some point. Super common, completely harmless. Great job as nature's perfect rat-killing machine. So we love those guys. We don't want to hurt them. We don't want to kill them. Also, we're on occasion going to see a corn snake. Okay, and again, you can look these up, but technically just learn the venomous snakes. But corn snake's going to have usually bright orange splotches on it with a black outline. Very easy to see. Again, harmless. Loves to eat the rats. Then we're going to have actual rat snakes, and those can be very long snakes sometimes. Those guys, we've seen them up to 6-7 feet. They get much larger than that. It's just what I've personally seen. That's going to be more of a green snake, and it's going to have some brown longitudinal lines on it. Again, fantastic at eating the rats. We love that.
I never heard of those.
So, yeah, people don't see
those. I saw one had gotten hit by a car recently, right? My bike down Four Mile Cove in Cape Cod.
Really?
And which one of those snakes is the one that most prevalently leaves snake skins, like in shrubbery around houses?
Okay, that's definitely going to be the black racer. You're going to see a lot of those skins. So don't feel like if you see a skin, all of a sudden it's a bad snake doing bad things. The population of the non-venomous snakes are tremendously high versus the population, which is tremendously low, of the venomous snakes. So not a big concern there.
They're friends.
They are. The biggest tip I can give for snakes, because this is a huge phone call I get, is, oh my gosh, I just came out to my lanai. I'm at the pool, and there's a snake in here with me. What the heck? How did it get in? All my screens look like they're intact. The way they get in is the door sweep on your screen door. That little rubber piece is the difference between them getting in and not getting in. When it doesn't meet the ground, or it's old, they're rubber, they break up, it's Florida weather, they can crawl right underneath. So just check your door sweeps from the inside, see if you see light coming through. If you do, awesome. Just pop a new one on. It's a Lowe's or Home Depot item, costs you $12. That is the ultimate physical barrier against the snakes. So just check it out.
Awesome.
Okay. So what is number five on your list of Florida's most unwanted?
Okay, number five is going to be bats.
Bats, you say?
Bats, yes. Bats are, they hold a very special place in our state because they are nature's perfect mosquito-eating machine in addition to other insects. So highly protected species. It's on the endangered list, but it isn't technically. We just don't want to hurt them in any way because they do such a good job. It's a non-chemical way to get rid of a tremendous amount of mosquitoes that wouldn't have been taken care of otherwise, or use of chemicals, which if we can avoid that, that's always good. What does make them also very interesting is, which some people know, I guess some don't, is they are the only mammals that can fly. So there's that. A couple species of those guys. And again, we'll see those primarily at night. We see them a lot of times around buildings or where there's a water source, or areas where they're going to attract insects.
Right.
We see those a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to see them a lot at another house I had up north where right at dusk, they'd come out and start swarming around the backyard and start eating bugs, which was good. All right, your number four. Oh, you have another point you're going to make,
one,
I can tell.
Yeah, one last point on the bats I forgot to mention is that bats are, they're even protected from repelling in any way for a certain portion of the year. So from April 15th to to August 15th, even if you have a bat issue, nothing can be done about that. So if it happens anywhere in that time frame, usually our first time to be able to do anything is August 16th. They are protected because that's when they're nursing their young. If you exclude bats, meaning that you keep them away from something, from a building or a home or something, you're keeping them from getting back to their offspring, which will now die. So they're highly protected and they're completely off limits for that time frame.
Wow. All right. Number four on your list of Florida's most unwanted.
Okay. Number four, armadillos. These are the guys that look like little dinosaurs walking around. Some people never see them, or they'll see them dead on the side of the road.
Yeah.
They like to be as strictly nocturnal as possible because they're not good at fighting against other predators. The design of the body is made to be a digging machine, not a fighter.
Huh.
So they're actually, in my opinion, fairly fragile. We have what's called the nine-banded armadillo, and that's nine plates that overlap each other. They give it mobility. They give it its ability to flex and move. It's not a turtle-type hard shell. It's more like a thick leather, best way to describe it.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing protects them on the underside. They're very, very vulnerable. So their main thing they love to do is dig. So it's kind of when you see one in an area, you can be sure that there's not one little burrow that they've dug. They've dug lots because when they run across predators, they want to go to the closest burrow, which they need it to be close, and they run into that, and that's usually what keeps them safe from like a coyote or things like that.
Yeah.
The slight downside of those guys is they can be a carrier of leprosy, which some people have heard
leprosy.
Of. That they can be a possible carrier. That's actually pretty tough to get. Generally, if people are eating them, which is not recommended, you can pick it up that way. Or if you're handling them quite a bit without gloves, and then you're putting your hands in your mouth, or you got to open it. It's actually fairly hard to get this.
Yeah.
If by chance you do get leprosy, it's a very it sounds terrible, but it's a very easily treatable bacteria.
Oh.
So it's a non-issue. It just sounds horrible from biblical times, but it's super simple treatment.
Actually, A1 back when I was a kid, we went hunting in the Everglades. Long story.
Rite of passage.
For another time. Yeah. But yeah.
Wow.
But it was cooked thoroughly. But
yeah, as long as it's cooked all the way. Totally good, like anything else.
A little roadkill stew. There you go. And
yes.
Number three in your list of Florida's most unwanted, Patrick.
Okay, number three, I'm going to put it, we're going to put the opossum. People also call that a possum. The technical name is opossum. Opossum actually is a completely different animal from another country. But opossums are interesting because that is our only marsupial that we've got. Marsupial meaning it's got a pouch, just like a kangaroo. And it actually has a prehensile tail. It can clutch onto things. Clutches onto things with its feet. I put it high enough up on the list, not because it's a dangerous thing. It's because it looks dangerous, but it really isn't. Looks like it's got an oversized rat head on it, you know, very aerodynamic
like giant,
shape.
Scary killer rat.
Yeah. Giant scary killer rat. That's exactly right. So that freaks people out. And when you approach one, it usually looks back at you, and then it starts hissing at you, showing you its big teeth. And it's got some canines. It's got some teeth.
Really?
But they really don't want to attack you. They really want you to be afraid and you leave. These guys are, the best way to describe them is like a ground vulture. So when there's something dead, there's roadkill, guess who's going to show up? Our friend, the opossum.
Huh.
And they're going to be the cleanup artist and take care of that. No different than a vulture. So we really like these guys.
Yeah.
They've got some other interesting characteristics, which I always found fascinating, is that they do not, for the most part, have the ability to develop rabies. It's one of the few mammals that can do that, meaning that they can get bit by something rabid and not acquire it. So lots of good research going into that of why that is.
Yeah.
They also have this amazing ability to eat a venomous snake and be able to process and digest the venom without it killing them. Almost nothing else can do that.
Like a mongoose.
Uh-huh.
Like mongoose, exactly. Huh. They eat ticks, and we're not big in our area with ticks, but areas that do have a lot of ticks, these guys eat thousands of ticks. Mm-hmm. They're tick-eating machines, which is great.
Keep the Lyme disease down. Yeah.
Yeah, they carry so many blood-borne illnesses. Nobody wants that. So these guys look scary. People feel like, oh my gosh, I want that thing dead, but they are really, really, really helpful for the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And they generally don't really, as far as even getting into houses and stuff, not really. The biggest issue we see with those guys is they're good at getting into fenced areas, like where people have dogs, for example. And the dogs will go crazy. They smell the possum. It's hiding in something in the brush. Dogs are going wild, and they want to attack it, and everything's going nuts. But generally, they don't really cause any issues at all. So we like the opossum.
Very cool. Hey, Jerry, I want to give you a little heads up now, because yes. We're going to get to the top of the, or the bottom of the list, I should say, of Florida's most unwanted. Now, Patrick had told me that there is no number one. It's kind of a tie. So we're going to cue up the band. We've got the Royal Palmcast band ready to go.
You guys ready back there?
And
okay.
So when we're ready, we'll get the band to do the drum roll for the top two or bottom two Florida's least wanted.
Okay. So we've got raccoon and rat as 1A and 1B.
Whoa.
Okay. Pretty similar in one similar to the other in how one's perceived versus the actual damage that another one does. So we've got these two kind of weird ends of the spectrum, but kind of creates an equivalence. So we'll start off with raccoon. Those are pretty simple. Everybody knows what a raccoon looks like. Raccoons are one of the smartest and strongest combination animals on the planet. They can actually think their way through things and make decisions, and they've got dexterity enough in their hands. Paws, but darn near close to hands, and their body to do things that most animals can't. Big issue people run into with raccoons is they get into their trash. And so, you know, we see people putting their trash, their smelly trash, inside their garage to keep them away, or they'll put bungee cords. The technique for raccoons is simple, especially with the... In our area, at least, we have very specific types of trash cans. They're generally pretty heavy duty and they're tall. But the mistake people make with trash cans is they put them all next to each other. Okay, so what a raccoon does, it doesn't get on top of the trash can it wants to open. It gets on the one next to it.
Mm.
And then it's using that as leverage by standing on it. That's how it opens it. Okay, so
Wily.
Your technique is simple. Spread your trash cans out about 4 to 5 feet. You'll never have a raccoon issue.
Interesting.
No bungee cords, no bringing the smelly trash in the garage. Separate your cans.
You know what we did when I was a kid? We had a place where we rented on the lake every summer, and there we had a galvanized garbage pail where we put the organic kind of material, the food waste, and raccoons were all over the place near this lake, of course. Mm. And so we had a pulley and counterweight system where we lifted it off the ground about 8 feet.
And like you would for bears.
Yeah. So you couldn't quite get to it.
That's funny. That works. You gotta go with what works.
Yeah.
So, easy technique.
So that leaves us with the humble rat.
It does. Leaves us with the rat. Okay. Now, the rat... We'll go into a couple details on rats, because there's a bit to those. So we've got two species of rat. We've got a roof rat, okay, which is most common. 80 to 85% of our population is roof rat. And it's called by lots of different names. I've had people call it a tree rat, a fruit rat, a black rat. The black rat is actually right. The other two aren't. The technical term is roof rat. And these guys they're omnivores, but they're going to lean a lot more towards herbivore, okay? Meaning that they're going to get into fruits. They're going to get into vegetables. So if you got fruit trees, you're always going to have the potential for it. They reproduce very, very quickly. Female rat can be born and be ready to reproduce in 35 days, okay? Sheesh. And she can have 5 litters a year. And those litters down here, we don't see big, big litters. You'll see bigger litters up north. But anywhere from 2 to 5 is pretty common. 4 mm-hmm. is our most common number. But just using that number, if half of those are female, say it's an even number like 4, half of those are female that she just gave birth to, they can now also start reproducing on their own in 35 days, 5 litters worth. So if you do the crazy exponential math on something like that, just a single pair of rats, and a male rat is not involved with juveniles at all. A male rat's job is to be polygamous and impregnate as many females as possible. But starting off with a pair of rats, you go exponential very, very quickly at a starting point of the beginning of the year to the end of the year. So rats are easily and not even close to our biggest issue. The second species of rat is a Norway rat. That rat's going to be bigger. That rat is going to also be an omnivore, but it's going to lean more towards proteins, meats, meaning it's going to eat other things, other animals, things that are protein-based. So it's going to make the rat slightly larger. But at the same time, they don't really do anything different from the other guys. They're slightly larger. That doesn't mean they do an extra bit of damage. They all do the same thing. They don't have bowel control on either species. So when you know you've got rats, when you see the rat feces. And rat feces is very, very obvious to see. You know, it's about a quarter inch long. It's capsule-shaped. It's solid. People do confuse lizard feces, you know, when we have our smaller little lizards that we see running around. The feces isn't that far off from it, but the lizard feces has a little white tail attached to it. That's how we know it's lizard. And you'll see that a lot outside by the front door, windowsills. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, we've got rats. And it's not, because rats don't do things like that for the most part. It's a lizard. Look for the little white tail attached to things. That's their urine, whereas a rat actually has liquid urine. Totally different. So that's how you can distinguish those guys. Best techniques there is we just want to make sure that you never, under any circumstance, if you have a rat in your attic, you're hearing noises, you just assume it'll go away. It won't. It's going to stay. Your attic is safe. It's a great spot to reproduce, not have to worry about predators. So if you got it, definitely call somebody. Make sure they do not seal anything up until everybody's been removed. Mm-hmm. The big mistake I see down here is that, and it's more than I'd like to see, is that when that problem's identified, it's the company can automatically go towards sealing things up immediately, which makes a very predictable rat very unpredictable and dangerous, because it's going to panic. It's going to try to chew or claw its way out, and it doesn't care if there's electrical wires in the way, because they don't even know what those are. So we don't want any fires. We don't want chewing through, you know, if you've got PVC, you know, plumbing going through there. We don't want water leaks. We don't want crazy stuff. Make sure everybody's out first, then it gets sealed back up. And again, when you seal your house up, when the entries have been identified, it's got to be something a rat can't chew through. Those rat teeth and claws are razor sharp. So people grabbing a can of Great Stuff expansion foam to fill a hole isn't going to do a thing, okay? It'll slow the guy down for about 5 minutes, and you shoot right through it. Metal has to go back in those spots as a deterrent, things that cannot be chewed through by a rat.
Interesting, interesting stuff. Patrick, thank you for sharing your list with us. Those are definitely unwanted in my house, I'll tell you that, so... you're going to be getting a call from me if I meet up with these guys, any of them. Hey,
not a problem, Jerry.
Thank you so much for hanging out here today and doing
my pleasure.
Running the board.
Yeah, I love this. Love learning stuff.
Good stuff. Interesting. Hey, Patrick, what's your website?
Okay, to learn a little bit more about me and the different things that we do, it's professionalwildliferemoval.com. There'll be a little bit of everything on there. My phone is, you'll see a phone number attached to that. That phone is always on. There's always textability on that, email. So you can contact us anytime, even with questions. We take questions all day, every day. Anything that we can solve for somebody that doesn't cost them anything over the phone, a free little fix, I do it all the time, and I'm glad to do it. So professional wildlife removal.
Supports the DIY movement.
Exactly.
You are a mensch.
I'm a big fan.
Yeah, very cool. All right. Hey, thanks for listening, everyone. And if you want to get in touch with us, shoot an email to shows@rpcra.org, and we will love to hear from you. Thanks to everyone here at the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association for your support, especially our CEO, Beata Jones. We'll look forward to seeing you again next time.
Thanks for listening to the Royal Palmcast. Be sure to listen again each week. Share and subscribe on your favorite podcast app or YouTube for information about sponsorship opportunities for this and other RPCRA productions. Email us at shows@rpcra.org. This has been a production of the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association.